This is Andrew Kate.
And this is Ryan Capuano.
And welcome to another edition of the Death of Cinema podcast. In this week's episode, Ryan and Andrew share their picks for their most anticipated films of 2019. And we're going to get things started with, once again, me stretching out a list. Well, how shocking, after my top 12 from our last episode. But I'm going to be going with my top 15 most anticipated films for 2019. And safe to say, basically, you know, a couple weeks ago, I made a big list of just like 50-some-odd films or whatever. And I'm sure there's going to be a number of other films that are announced that we're both of us are going to be anticipating, but we just got to go with the hand we're dealt sort of at this early into 2019. But I just wanted to briefly mention, and just as Ryan is going to mention, my top most anticipated film from 2018 actually got pushed to 2019, much like in Ryan's case. In my choice, it was Under the Silver Lake, which I was really pumped for, David Robert Mitchell's follow-up to It Follows, starring Andrew Garfield. And I was really pumped for that, you know, a noir that is surely going to be a divisive film, but it seems like it's definitely in my personal wheelhouse. So I'll be looking forward to that, but I'm not going to put it on my list for this year.
Yeah, and the same thing happened in my case, as Andrew mentioned. I had Mike Leigh's Peterloo, which is about the massacre of Peterloo. I am terrible at British history, so I guess I'm just going to have to wait to see the movie to find out dry Mike Leigh fashion. But this film, unfortunately, I think was pushed back until April. But according to some of the festival reviews last year, it is classic Mike Leigh. So for me, but probably not for anyone else.
Yeah, well, you know, I definitely can appreciate some Mike Leigh. Not all, not as hardcore as you are, certainly, but definitely a great filmmaker who's always worth checking out his latest project. But now, like I said, I'll jump into my top 15. As I said, Ryan will have a traditional top 10, like the good film enthusiast he is. But I'm going to get things started. Like I said, my picks aren't really in any necessary order other than my number one. But I'm going to get things started with Jordan Peele's follow-up to Get Out, Us, starring Lupita Nyong'o, who I love, and I'm really happy to see doing something certainly out of the box, at least for her career to date. But I mean, you don't really have to say much more than it's Jordan Peele's follow-up to Get Out. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen the trailer by now. Really intriguing premise, and I'm sure he's going to be turning things on his head just like he did in Get Out, and I couldn't be more excited for it. But
yeah. Yeah, it's actually the first choice on my list, too. My list isn't in any particular order, but like Andrew said, I have 10 and not 15, but since this is on my list, I'm just going to jump in where I can. It's just going to make this a lot less painful. But yeah, anyone who's seen the trailer, it's really interesting to use the song I Got Five on It by Loonies, because that is just, that song has always sounded creepy to me to begin with, but it's just used to such great effect in this trailer, and I kind of like when pop songs are kind of contorted in horror trappings. It just gives it a more sinister feel. I don't know. Like Andrew said, this is the follow-up to Get Out, and is surely to have that political context to it, too, that tickles my fancy, so...
Yeah, okay. So my next choice is a film, definitely I would say under the radar for most people. A lot of people weren't as big on her, sort of this film as I was, which is a film I got to see back in 2013 at TIFF. I believe it's 2013, if not the year prior. Sometimes with these dates, it's always hard to keep track with some of these festival releases that I get to see in 2018. And then, oh wait, it's coming out literally like a year later, if not longer. But this is a film called Mainstream from another Coppola, Coppola, who directed a film, a coming-of-age film that I was a huge fan of, in Palo Alto, adapted from a James Franco book, and I was really impressed with a lot of the performances in that, in particular from Emma Roberts, who I think is really underrated as an actress, and yeah, just gives a really great performance in that, as well as Jack Kilmer, Val Kilmer's son, who I thought was really impressive in that, and seems to be doing some different and interesting things with different roles here and there. But this is a film, like I said, from Gia Coppola. Obviously, if it has a Coppola in its name, usually it's a good sign. Not all the Coppolas are always as consistent as, obviously, you know, Francis Ford or Sofia, obviously being probably the best of them, I would say. But I know that's fighting words for some people, but I'll move along quickly. But basically, this is a film that stars Andrew Garfield. You know, I think people will know my Andrew Garfield bias at this point. Obviously, that doesn't include Amazing Spider-Man 2, a completely terrible, terrible film. It stars him, Maya Hawke, the daughter of Ethan Hawke, and Uma Thurman, as well as Nat Wolff and Jason Schwartzman, another actual, you know, Coppola in some form. But essentially, it's about a love triangle, a coming-of-age type thing. There isn't really that much information on it at this point, but safe to say I'm definitely excited for that one. And my next choice, I'm moving quickly along, trying to catch up to a top, getting down to a top 10, whittling it down, is another filmmaker following up a previous really great effort. And this is The Lighthouse from Robert Eggers, director of The Witch. So I'm really excited to see what he does here. I mean, basically what we have here is a story. It's sort of not much is known, but it's set in early 20th century Maine about lighthouse keepers. And the only cast announced are Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. And come on, I couldn't be more excited for this.
Yeah, I've said this before on the podcast, that no movie has ever gotten to me quite like The Witch as far as horror goes. I don't know, there's just something about the atmosphere that's so oppressive, and the imagery is so horrifying, and the last 10 minutes so insane that you just can't help but be put off by it in the best possible way. And, you know, I don't really know anything more about the film other than what you just said, but, you know, a lot of these choices you're making in good faith based on the name attached alone, so that's really all we have to go with here, and to that end, I am still very excited for it.
Oh, definitely. And my next choice is another director following another great film up, which is a common thread in here, obviously, because we get excited for these films from all of these really fantastic filmmakers. And my latest choice is Little Women from Greta Gerwig, following up Lady Bird. Obviously, Little Women is a story that has been told many different times. And I'll be honest, I can't say I'm that familiar with the story, and I've seen many of the previous adaptations. But I can be excited just for the latest Greta Gerwig film and starring an insane... absolutely insane cast, and that I'll list off here. We have Saoirse Ronan, obviously continuing that collaboration. We have Emma Watson, Laura Dern, Meryl Streep, Timothy Chalamet, Bob Odenkirk, who's been doing amazing work on Better Call Saul, and Chris Cooper. I mean, just that cast alone, doesn't it sound like just insanity? And obviously, we've talked about, you know, not always being the biggest fans of Meryl Streep. I think in this ensemble, I think it could be just really great to see these actors play off one another and just seeing what Greta Gerwig has in store for her next effort. My next choice is, once again... much like Robert Eggers' case, following up The Witch with The Lighthouse, we have Ari Aster following up Hereditary with Midsommar, I believe. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation, but I'll just go with it, which is, you know, all I had to see from the synopsis was it involves a pagan cult, and I was like, well, I mean, I'm in, and it also stars Florence Pugh, who is sort of on the rise and is starring in many different films coming up, including Fighting with My Family. Also, Jack Rayner and the ever underrated Will Poulter. And it's just, you know, another follow-up to a really insane horror movie. So I'm sure that's going to be one to watch in particular. But I believe I'm finally up to my number 10 pick. So I'll turn it over to Ryan so you don't have to keep listening to me babble on.
Well, we already ticked off two of my choices, but I'll get to one that I know this is going to sound really stupid, especially since we just crapped all over a movie that he was attached to a few months ago. I'm going to go with Dexter Fletcher's Rocket Man, which is the Elton John biopic. Brilliant casting decision to have Taron Egerton play Elton John, and I know he does his own singing in the film, and I mean... I just got a different vibe. I mean, first of all, I'm an Elton John devotee. He's one of my favorite pop stars of all time. But there's a different air about this particular the trailer that was released, at least. It feels like it has this whimsy to it. Like, it might some of it might veer into the fanciful. And I think something like that might go completely off the rails, or it could be completely brilliant and endearing. That unknown about this film, I mean... obviously, Dexter Fletcher had to come in and make the save on Bohemian Rhapsody after Bryan Singer was fired. Maybe they shouldn't have hired Bryan Singer in the first place, but that's neither here nor there. I'm curious to see what he can do when taking the reins from the get-go, because I think maybe he was handicapped in what he could have done with Bohemian Rhapsody. And like I said, this is either going to be a train wreck or it's going to be amazing. And I don't know. I know you're a huge Elton John fan, too.
Definitely. I was fortunate enough to get to see him and Billy Joel in concert together at Gillette Stadium, everyone's favorite home of the most hated New England Patriots. Just an incredible, two of my absolute favorite artists. Just getting to experience him live was incredible. And I'm actually really excited for Rocketman as well. It didn't quite crack my top 15, but it was definitely among the array of 50 films that I had listed down in my random document. But my next choice is a film that premiered premiered very recently at the Sundance Film Festival, and it is titled Honey Boy. And this is, you know, Shia LaBeouf's, you know, latest opus. He's not the director of the film, but he wrote it. And all I have to do, I can read the sentence and you will understand why I'm excited for this. But essentially, you know, from what I've been gathering from the reviews, it's Shia LaBeouf's supposed love letter, if that's the right word, to his father, starring Lucas Hedges as Shia LaBeouf himself and Shia LaBeouf as his own father. I mean, what more do I need to say other than that? Obviously, Shia LaBeouf, you know, he became a meme at a certain point, you know, but I think he's an interesting artist, you know, and I think he definitely has potential as an actor. I don't know if it's completely been fully realized up to this point, but I'm excited to see whatever craziness he has in store with that choice, with that film in particular.
Yeah, that's just going to be pure insanity. Next film on my list is Spider-Man Far From Home, which, spoiler alert, Spider-Man probably makes it out of Avengers okay. This is probably just because I just finished playing the Spider-Man for PS4 game over the holiday season, so it's a little fresh in my mind. I'm just in a Spider-Man mood. You know, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was phenomenal. This probably won't be quite that good, but you got Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio coming in. That's going to be pretty insane. Yeah, you really can't. I mean, some of the Marvel franchises I'm a little less enthused for, but I always have a special place in my heart for Spider-Man, especially since, you know, the Tobey Maguire 2002 iteration basically invented the summer movie season opening weekend. I mean, it's a character that holds a special place in my heart, and I can't not be excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even have to say much because everyone knows I'm a Spider-Man freak. So obviously this was up on my list a bit higher, but I can get away with it, you know, right here. You know, Ryan mentioned Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio. Jake Gyllenhaal being one of my absolute favorite actors. Mysterio being a supervillain I never thought we'd see on the big screen, but has always been one of my absolute favorites, if not my favorite villain. Obviously they're doing something a bit different with him here, although for those of you, you know, eagle-eyed people, I think you could probably figure out that the way he's presented in the trailer doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be how he's presented throughout the entirety of the film. But I couldn't be more excited just even getting to see the classic costume, you know, on just in the trailer alone. I was just like, oh my god, I'm so ready for this. And I mean, I just thought Spider-Man Homecoming was just such a blast. I think Tom Holland is absolutely perfect casting. I think he's such a joy to watch on screen. I think he's just so engaging, and I couldn't be more excited to see him on the screen as Spider-Man once again. But I guess I'll transition, because I know I have a few more than you, but I'll transition to, obviously, one of the events of 2019, Star Wars Episode 9, J.J. Abrams, returning to the fold, thankfully. Anything's better than Colin Trevorrow, as far as I'm concerned, you know, and I enjoy, and I liked both The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. I know that last part is fighting words for some people. Obviously, one of the most divisive films of all time, in one of the most divisive times to live, so I guess a lot of stuff just makes sense. But, you know, I know both of us were just big fans of The Last Jedi, and I liked, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, and I speak from, you know, I can say this because, you know, growing up, literally Star Wars for most of my life was the only thing I cared about. I was one of these, you know, Star Wars nerds, obsessive, going to, you know, opening night of the prequels, you know, that's really aged well. But you know, like, now that I, you know, went to film, you know, film school, not that, you know, but, you know, I'm such a film enthusiast, and I've gone to film school and just gotten, you know, an education in film, and sort of my taste sort of widened, you know, obviously given our list full of art house favorite films of the year. But you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, people I think want to put Star Wars in a box, and nerds are sort of so close to, like, oh, what are you doing, you're ruining my childhood. Jesus Christ, I mean, come on. I mean, it's just honestly, it's ridiculous at this point. And don't get me wrong, I think there are legitimate criticisms of the film. It's certainly not a flawless film in any way, shape or form, and if you want to give legitimate criticisms of the film, you're definitely more than happy to. And I've seen some criticism that I think is justified, but I just think a lot of it has come down to toxic fandom, toxic fanboys. And I think, you know, people should try and expand their horizons. Star Wars doesn't just have to be this one thing. You can expand the world and take it in different directions. And I hope JJ, you know, I hope, obviously we know what JJ is as a filmmaker, so he's not going to reinvent the wheel here, but I'm just hoping he really has fun with it and does some different things for Episode 9.
I'm sure it'll be fine. It's Star Wars. You know, I said that before Solo, too, now that I think of it. Next film on my list is Jon Favreau's The Lion King, because why the hell not? I have problems with the first animated Lion King. Yeah, obviously, I loved it when I was a kid, and, you know, as I've grown older, I've been able to nitpick it just, you know, just to kind of be a dick. But I think it just kind of comes back to, I'll say, so Hans Zimmer went on tour a couple years ago, and he performed just music from his films, and the thing is that one of the things he did, he was a medley of music from The Lion King at one point. It's like a 7.5 minute suite, and it kind of culminates with the Circle of Life, and it's just unbelievable the power and the emotion that's driven just from the music alone. So I think just because that piece of music is now, after having listened to it, is so close to my heart, that kind of makes me want to see this film that uses that so well in the trailer. I mean, the trailer is absolutely beautiful. I think Greg Fraser, of all people, is actually shooting this live action where it's actually everything is CGI, so I still think it's technically animated. I don't know if the distinction between the two just seems bizarre, but that's neither here nor there. I think Jon Favreau nailed it with the Jungle Book a few years ago, and I think he was the right choice for this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely excited for The Lion King and to see sort of the live-action adaptation of it. Obviously, this is something that, you know, it's sort of tricky because they're just they're remaking in live-action a lot of their classic sort of catalog, and it's sort of weird, but, I mean, I remember I was pleasantly surprised by Beauty and the Beast. You know, I know a lot of people were not, but, you know, I went with it. Maybe it's my Emma Watson bias. You know, probably it is. And Dan Stevens, for that matter. But, you know, I mean, The Lion King, as far as that's concerned, I'm definitely excited, but, you know, my one concern is, you know, I definitely like Jon Favreau's Jungle Book, but my issue with it is, you know, there isn't really any naturalism to when we have these animals, you know, in CG talking. You know, it's sort of like, because you're making them so realistic, there's something that just doesn't feel right. You know, and I think that's something that, you know, is a concern of mine, and that's why I think I wasn't as big on the Jungle Book as a lot of people were, although I definitely liked it for sure. It's just one of those things that I feel like it's hard to get over, and that's why I feel like these stories were perfect in animation in the first place. But, you know, I can definitely get past that with an incredible cast, and that trailer definitely delivered. So hopefully it can deliver as well in feature-length form. But my next choice is a film from a filmmaker I know you love. It's the latest from Jim Jarmusch. It's called The Dead Don't Die, and all you have to say is it's a zombie film directed by Jim Jarmusch. What more could you want? Now, obviously, zombies have been quite overexposed in recent pop culture, but if anyone is going to do something crazy different, obviously, it's Jim Jarmusch. He's not going to be making some mainstream comedy. I can't imagine, at least. That would be crazy if that's what it turned out to be. But, of course, his cast, headlined by typical Jarmusch favorites, obviously, Bill Murray and Adam Driver, who's been doing some amazing work. He was in, you know, Patterson, Jim Jarmusch, I believe it was his last film. That was my favorite of the year in which it was released. Chloe Sevigny is in the cast, Selena Gomez, Steve Buscemi, Tilda Swinton, and Daniel Craig. I mean, what a cast. I mean, that's just insane. And I'm also one of these proponents that Daniel Craig is insanely underrated as an actor. His performance in Casino Royale alone, I think, is the best performance by a Bond ever. You know, and I think, you know, I know a lot of people sometimes, you know, they can't get past just the engaging sort of stare that he gives. But I think that's the power of his acting. He just jumps off the screen. And I just would love to see him in this different context, especially after seeing him in Logan Lucky. I would love to see Daniel Craig just sort of push his limits in different directions.
Yeah, Jim Jarmusch is one of my favorite filmmakers, although I have been slacking on Jim Jarmusch as of late. But based on the premise alone, and obviously just by strength of filmmaker alone, I am very much in the bank for that one. And I wholeheartedly agree about Daniel Craig. I think he's kind of one of those guys like Hugh Jackman that just get overlooked for how good they actually are, even though they have that, you know, tough macho shithead persona on camera. Anyway, my next film is It Chapter 2, the follow-up to It Chapter 1 of all things, which is a film that really took me by surprise. I wasn't like... We were kind of in this, you know, post-Stranger Things world where we have this band of misfits that are, you know, horror starts happening in their small town. And I know that, obviously, the novel of It precedes anything Stranger Things, but it just still had that that same line of thinking. And, you know, honestly, I think it worked really well in the first film. I know we're going to be transitioning to adults. You know, James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain are going to be in the cast. Bill Hader, I believe, is in it as well. And I know this is just Funhouse Scare and Boo and stuff like that, but it's really what's most entertaining about this film at least was the interaction between the characters. So I'm wondering, I'm nervous that that's not going to parlay into the adulthood, but I also still think that there's room to kind of explore some of the darker edges of this particular story. So fingers crossed, I think it's definitely going to be different, but hopefully a natural progression.
Definitely. And so my next choice is another big blockbuster that's going to be coming out, Avengers Endgame. Of course, this is obviously a big event film. I probably don't really have to say much more than Avengers Endgame, of course. But I think the prospects are exciting just because obviously we know they're going to have to do something crazy to bring some of these characters back. I mean, if that's a spoiler to you, I'm sorry, but get over it. But obviously, you know, this is going to be the send-off for some of these actors who we've watched in these series of films. You know, obviously we don't know which ones, but we can probably assume, you know, some clear ones that feel like obvious choices. But it's going to be really interesting to see how all these things sort of come to a head. And I know some people are of the opinion, oh, Marvel, and just roll their eyes. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, there's nothing wrong with a big blockbuster popcorn entertainment. And if you don't like it, you know, watch something else. It's not that difficult. You know, and obviously you can see that our taste is all over the place. We watch these really arty things. And yes, we enjoy Marvel movies as well. So Avengers Endgame, I mean, obviously it's one of the big event films of the year. So obviously that's got to be on my list. And I'll also transition into another one of the blockbusters that is definitely and my most anticipated, which is Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Michael Dougherty is finally going really big budget. Obviously he made Krampus and Trick or Treat, two, I think, underrated films. But this cast, you know, Kyle Chandler, Vera Farmiga, and Millie Bobby Brown. Obviously, Ken Watanabe's back, along with Sally Hawkins. I mean, just a really great cast. The trailer alone just really got me pumped. I thought it was the best trailer I saw all year, the first initial trailer with that incredible score that kicks in. But just seeing Godzilla battle these other monsters of my childhood, I was one of these kids who always went to the video store and rented Godzilla. And most of the movies I probably didn't even, like, understand, or they were boring, or they were boring as hell. But, you know, I couldn't be more pumped for the latest Godzilla.
You know, I'll even go to bat for Roland Emmerich's Godzilla on a really bad day. but, you know, this new one obviously is going to be amazing. As you know, as far as Avengers goes, it's Avengers. I think I kind of said my piece about how anyone could feel about it before they even walk into the theater. You're going in and watching a cartoon, basically, that's as long as Eyes Wide Shut. It's either for you or it's not. And honestly, it's just sometimes you need that brainless entertainment because everything else is so dour in this godforsaken universe, and so much of that is reflected in some of the other films that we see this in a given year. So honestly, sometimes we just need to turn off our brains and watch Spider-Man and Iron Man and all that. But the next film on my list, I don't know, I'll be honest, I just put this on here based on strength of director. It's Rian Johnson's Knives Out. I literally don't know anything else about it, so I can't fill you in any more than that, but I think Andrew might be able to.
Yeah, Knives Out is my number one. Like I said, the rest of these aren't really in any order, but Knives Out is absolutely my number one most anticipated. Obviously, all you have to do is say the words Rian Johnson and it sends people into a tizzy. But this is a guy, you know, who made a film that I am a massive fan of in Brick, a really underrated noir, and that's why I'm really excited for this as a modern-day murder mystery that I guess is taking inspiration from Agatha Christie. But the cast, you know, I already mentioned some of these people starring Daniel Craig. Obviously, I just went on my rant about him, so I don't have to say much more. Lakeith Stanfield, Chris Evans, Michael Shannon, Christopher Plummer, Jamie Lee Curtis, Toni Collette, Don Johnson, and of course, Rian Johnson regular Noah Segan. I'm just really excited for this. Obviously, you know, and that's the interesting thing about Rian Johnson, because he has made films in the past that a lot of people were big fans of that I wasn't in Looper, although I feel like I probably need to rewatch that and give it another go, especially, you know, with Emily Blunt in it, as who I love. It's one of those films that just didn't connect with me when I saw it, and it just, you know, it's one, you know, it happens. But I'm just a big fan of all of his other work, you know, The Brothers Bloom, and, you know, as well as Last Jedi, as we just talked about. But Knives Out, it feels like a complete different change of pace for him, and I couldn't be more excited, and I feel like it's gonna have a lot indebted to Brick, which I think is always a good sign as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you for filling that in, Andrew. Next on my list would actually be a documentary that recently premiered at Sundance and is going to start all kinds of shit this year, and I cannot wait to see the think pieces on that one. It is Dan Reed's Leaving Neverland, which centers around two individuals who accused Michael Jackson of molesting them as children, and how they recanted at the trial and then eventually realized that they kind of suppressed their own trauma and didn't realize until years later that what had actually happened to them. And I think it's just going to be interesting to see. I mean, I shouldn't say interesting. This is going to be a horrible thing to sit through. Some of the descriptions of what happens in the film is really just this unnerving, alarming stuff. But it is a movie that I think needs to be made. If Michael Jackson is the monster that these gentlemen imply, and I do, you know, I have a policy of just believing the accusers when they say that, then that's something that a lot of us are going to have to rethink in how we view this man. And I think that. Whether or not I've heard that it's a solid enough as a documentary in itself, but I just think that the cultural uproar that it's going to cause and the different tangents of thought that are going to come because of it throughout the course of this year is really going to be something just really depressing to behold.
Yeah, definitely one to look for, but I just couldn't put it on my most anticipated. Something about it, I was just like, you know, obviously, and it just broke lately, so I didn't even think about putting it on my list, but definitely one that I'm looking forward to checking out. But my latest choice on my list is Harmony Korine is back, you know, and it seems like in Spring Breakers mode with The Beach Bum, starring Matthew McConaughey as his character Moondog. All you have to do is go and watch the trailer and you'll understand what kind of insanity is going to be going on here. Obviously, you know, we were both big fans of Spring Breakers. You know, I think a lot of people didn't get the movie, didn't really understand. I remember when we were walking out of the theater, people were like, are they trolling us or something? You know, I don't think people just don't. And I understand, you know, not everyone has all the time and is nerds as us diving head deep and learning about all these crazy filmmakers. And Harmony Korine obviously is one of the foremost crazy ones. And obviously, this is a film starring Matthew McConaughey as Moondog, a rebellious stoner. You know, that's all you need to say to be like, oh, all right, you know, I'm game to see Matthew McConaughey go off the deep end. And you see that in the trailer with the backing of Crimson and Clover, which is one of my favorite songs. So it got me there, but the rest of this cast is insane. Like a lot of these casts I've been listing off are, we have Snoop Dogg, Isla Fisher, Zac Efron, Jimmy Buffett, Martin Lawrence, and Jonah Hill. And just a comment on Jimmy Buffett, he gave one of the worst renditions of the national anthem I've heard before that Saints-Rams game, and I think that's reason enough for the refs to screw him over.
Yeah, amen on that. No argument here. Beach Bum is also on my list, and I just, you know, obviously I adored Spring Breakers to death, and I actually I watched that with people who I didn't think would like the movie but were surprisingly game for the insanity that it put forth. So I think that if you are willing to give it a shot, you can kind of look beneath it and if you just go with it, you just might like it. Beach Bum very much fits into that. I remember when we saw the first images of McConaughey dressed as a beach bum on the skateboard and he's holding a lobster or something. It's just like that's the kind of movie where you know, my mind usually is, wink wink. So this is something that I feel like I'm going to be on that wavelength, and I think it's just going to be one of those movies that works for me. But the last movie on my list, I went through it pretty quick, is actually James Gray's Ad Astra, and this is again once again going on the strength of the filmmaker alone. I was a huge fan of The Lost City of Z from a couple years ago. He just has this way with epic filmmaking that is really unseen nowadays. I mean, everyone is going more towards a digital aesthetic, and this isn't really just like a digital versus analog argument. It's really in the way that the camera is used. It just feels old-timey. If you know, we get more wide shots than we're used to in films, and it just feels like more grand in scale, and you don't necessarily see that in a lot of films nowadays that favor close-ups or mediums or even, you know, medium tracking shots. I think just that kind of romanticism that James Gray brings to filmmaking is something that's even if it's old-timey, it's still fresh as hell.
Yeah, this was one of the last two on my list, you know, and you had me at James Gray Goes to Space. I mean, it just feels like such a unique setting for a filmmaker like him, and I just feel like it's just going to be a joy to watch, just on any level, on definitely on our art house nerd level. But that cast, you know, Brad Pitt, Tommy Lee Jones, Ruth Negga, Donald Sutherland, and then I was looking through the cast and I was like, and Jamie Kennedy? I say that with a question, you know, purposefully, because I was like, oh, Jamie Kennedy, all right, but I'm game. James, go get into James Gray world, and maybe we'll come out the other end with Jamie Kennedy as a serious actor, which sounds insane, but Why not? I'm not judging. Definitely. My last choice, obviously I already gave away that Knives Out was my number one, but my last choice is a film called Lucy in the Sky, which was originally titled Pale Blue Dot, and it hails from Noah Hawley, one of the TV masters of the last few years, who has been doing incredible work on Fargo and Legion, although I've only seen the first season, so I haven't caught up on that quite yet, but Fargo alone is enough to be like, wow. But this guy, you know, he's making his feature film debut. I mean, yeah, you had me at that. And with this cast, I mean, you had me even more, because it's literally a cast of a lot of my favorite actors. But it's about, once again, it's set in space. It's about an astronaut, Natalie Portman, although I guess it's only partially set in space, but it's about an astronaut played by Natalie Portman who returns home and discovers her sense of reality has changed in unexpected ways. And the rest of this cast, like I said, is a collection of my favorite people, John Hamm, Zazie Beetz, who's been doing amazing work on Atlanta, and Dan Stevens, who's been doing amazing work on Legion. You know, I'm just a big fan of this cast, of Noah Hawley in general, and this is definitely one of my most anticipated for the year, without question.
Noah Hawley is a guy that it's hard to know what to make of him sometimes, just because, especially with Fargo. I mean, Fargo is a show that's just all over the map for me, even though if I usually come out on the positive. There's just something about the way, maybe it's just because he's hindered by the fact that he's trying to pay homage to the Coens, that he hasn't really stretched his legs. And then Legion was him just kind of letting loose after that. Maybe he'll find some middle ground here. Because Legion, I admire a lot of it, and I think there are certain sequences that are absolute knockouts. But by and large, it kind of left me just kind of cold and confused, and I know that, you know, some could argue that that was the point, but maybe it's just not for me to that end. This, I mean, based on the cast alone and the premise, and obviously this is a very, whether or not you'd like it, it's still very interesting, so hell yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention a few other just sort of honorable mentions, other films that I consider, because I'm sure there's some people gone nuts out there that we didn't mention, a few certain films that I'm sure you could probably gather what they are, but I'm going to go through them anyway. Obviously, Captain Marvel we have coming out in about a month or so. It's one of those films that I am excited for because I'm a massive Brie Larson fan, but I haven't really been that grabbed by any of the trailers. I do like the filmmaking team that's behind it, Ryan Bowden and Alan... and Flecker, I have terrible pronunciation, but those filmmakers, I think they're really good, and it's interesting to see them taking on something Marvel. I was really hoping for them to go a bit more, really go gung-ho into the 90s with some of the trailers, but maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised by the film. But I'm sure it's going to be fun just to see Brie Larson and Samuel L. Jackson as apparently a buddy cop team from what I'm hearing. But, you know, definitely one to look for. John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum. I mean, I could not be pumped for this. The first two John Wicks are literally some of the best action films of the last decade, and I'm pumped for it. Obviously, it's Keanu just being Keanu, as always, but the John Wick films are always a blast, and they're definitely worth checking out if you want to. Obviously, we have weird things like Guy Ritchie directing an Aladdin movie. I mean, that's just insane, but I am pumped to see, you know, obviously, a really great, you know, lots of newcomers in the cast, obviously, as you would expect, and I think that's going to be really exciting to watch. Obviously, Will Smith as a genie, I have no idea, but we'll see what happens, and with Guy Ritchie directing it, you just really have no idea. Some other ones, obviously this is one of the ones I was alluding to, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's the latest, and I will say, you know, I do like Tarantino as a filmmaker. He's not one of my absolute favorites, like I know there's many Tarantino disciples out there because he's just so cool, but you know, he is, don't get me wrong, I've seen some people though, you know, take it too far the other way where they're like, you know, posting on social media, Quentin Tarantino is a bad filmmaker. I'm sorry, if that's your opinion, you need to rethink your priorities. I don't care if you're even that much of a fan of a Tarantino, you can at least respect that he has a craft to his films, and I'm a big fan of Jackie Brown in particular, as well as Kill Bill Volume 2. I know a lot of people prefer the first one, but Volume 2 is where it's at for me. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, this, I will say, this is honestly one of the most excited I've been for a Tarantino movie, just because of the story, you know, Senator, obviously, you know, it's sort of, you know, crazy cast with Leo, Brad Pitt playing his stunt double or something, Margot Robbie, Sharon Tate, and that sort of, you know, Charles Manson stuff. Obviously, I'm excited for it just because I want to see, you know, how he does it. And I feel like this is something, you know, obviously, just from the title alone, I'm already sort of game. And I would say this is one of the most excited I've been for a Tarantino movie. But, you know, with him not being one of my personal absolute favorites, you know, it didn't end up quite making my list. And then others, you know, Todd Phillips making that Joker film. Obviously, it's a Todd Phillips film, so I couldn't in good conscience put it on my list. But, you know, it stars like I said, the best actor working right now, as far as I'm concerned, Joaquin Phoenix. And so I'm pumped for that alone, as well as Zazie Beetz is in it as well. And I think that alone could be interesting. And they're clearly trying to do something different. And I'm just excited for the performance from Phoenix alone. And then obviously we couldn't not mention The Irishman, Martin Scorsese's long, waited, obviously this is coming from Netflix probably this year if they finish those special effects, de-aging all those actors. I couldn't put it on my list. Don't get me wrong, I love Scorsese, and I was a big fan of Silence, from a couple years ago. But it didn't make my list because it's really an unknown, because we have, he's returning with his old familiars. De Niro, Pesci, Pacino. It's just a really, although Pacino isn't really, I wouldn't say Scorsese regular, to say the least. Has he even made a film with him? I don't even know. Not that I can recall, at least from off the head. But just that cast alone, you could see sort of, like, obviously for some people, they'd be like, oh my God, that sounds like the greatest thing of all time. But for me, I'm a bit hesitant just because I've seen where De Niro and Pacino's careers have gone. It's great to see Joe Pesci finally being pulled back, because I know he wasn't a big fan of the fame, I guess, in general. But a great actor in his own right, who I think would be really fun to see just on screen in anything at this point. But it's hard to know what to expect from it at this point, so I really have no clue.
I don't either, and there's just something that's off about that. The casting of this film just makes it seem like it's there to just appease your uncle, so you have something to talk about at Thanksgiving other than politics. It's like, hey, did you see The Irishman? That's a good movie. Like, just like stuff like that. There's nothing about it that really is striking me at the moment, so that's going to be a wait and see. I think Netflix is distributing it, if I'm not mistaken, so that'll probably be a day and date release, and I don't even have to leave my house and sit with those types of people in the theater. But yeah, nothing else is popping out of me in 2019. I feel like all years, and the older I get, the more my tastes refine, and I realize that the best movies of the year that are likely coming out, I probably haven't even heard of yet. So I'm comfortable with where I stand as far as from a blockbuster and sneaking in an auteur here and there. Other than that, nothing's really jumping out at me.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess we can turn our attention to next week, although we didn't discuss this permanently. I guess we can figure it out now. But I believe we're going to start 2019, at least with the Lego Movie 2, and I believe Velvet Buzzsaw, which is coming to Netflix this Friday, which has gotten, safe to say, an interesting reaction from what I'm seeing. Lots of craziness and negativity, which I'm not exactly surprised by after the trailer, but I'm game. I'm gung-ho. There's a really weird backstory to this film, which we'll touch on in that episode, which I was reading recently. It was just crazy. I believe that's the plan. I know Ryan really wants to see this Liam Neeson snowplow movie, A Cold Pursuit, but I guess we'll have to hold off on that at least for a week, and we'll see what comes, because it's not exactly like February is exactly stacked in terms of quality films.
Yeah, I'll get over that, don't worry. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.